members attending today are Representative Larson, Representative Furness.
There you go.
Representative Cotter, Representative Schultz, myself, Representative Abboud is chairman. For those, I do not have in front of me the testimony sheet. I'd like to get that, please. However, I will say that regarding, I was going to hear House Bill 93, which is an act relating to limitation of the number of state employees. I am going to hold that bill over because Representative Bettisworth is going to be submitting a sponsor substitute for that bill. And he needs a little time to prepare it. So we will put House Bill 93 back into the limbo file and pull it out when Representative Bettisworth is prepared. Any questions on it from the committee? If not, we'll proceed then to House Bill 106. An act relating to Alaska bidder preference. Simple. Section 1 is amended to read a bid should be awarded to an Alaskan bidder if the bid is not more than 15% higher than the lowest non-resident bidders. They're attempting to change it from 5 to 15. Well, nice to have you with us. Oh. Representative Ward is here. Representative Ward, which is the primary sponsor, care to give some testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee. My name is Representative Jerry Ward from District 13A, Anchorage. I'm the sponsor of this bill. And there's been numerous people that have signed on to it. I like to point out that I'm not the total author of it. I heard of this being attempted through past legislatures since 1955, when the 5% bidder preference was enacted, and it's been 5% since that time. Regardless of the attempts to raise it up at least to an equal level of other states, and not even taking into consideration that there is a 30% higher cost of living in the state of Alaska. And taking that realm of the business with the 50% workload, we have a basic thing in Alaska where the Alaskan bidders are very competitive at this time. But with the 30% factor of higher cost of doing business in the state of Alaska, they are not competitive with the Seattle and the lower 48 firms. What this bill simply does, it takes that into effect, and in 1955, when the legislature, in its wisdom, did so properly, put in a 5% bidder preference, it was argued at that time that the cost of living should be taken into consideration, and it should be a 15% cost of bidder's preference. Other states have 10%, some have 5%, some have 3%. I have the breakdown of that, which I will leave with the committee at this time.
I believe we have it in our packet, Representative.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And so taking that with it, I feel that it's fully justifiable that this is an Alaska jobs bill. Notice upon the Department of Revenue's cost, the impact, I note your attention that their impact is an estimate of $50,000. Now, $50,000 creating jobs, this estimate does not include effects on construction contracts, travel, and other professional services which are not affected by this act. This merely changes the vendor, Alaska Bidder Preference Act of 1955 from 5 to 15%. And the $50,000, I'd like to although this is a tremendously large sum of money, I'd like to draw it to your attention that if we take that same $50,000 and give it to a Seattle firm, this will create two $25,000 a year jobs. But by putting that $50,000 into the Alaska market with the rollover factor that is there and percentage, this $50,000 over a period of years, those temporary 75 jobs that it's going to create day one will become permanent jobs, and an additional 75 temporary jobs under this subsidy, and that's what it is, it's a subsidy, will also become permanent jobs. And that is the economics of how it'll work. As a job has a bearing upon lasting, and this will translate into it. The part of it, to reduce competition as out-of-state firms are driven out of the Alaska market, I'd like to comment for just 1 second on that on the physical note. I don't believe for a minute it's going to reduce competition as out-of-state firms. What it's going to do, it's going to make those out-of-state firms establish a business in the state of Alaska, which is only a proper procedure. There's people on bidding list of Little Rock, Arkansas right now who have never been to the state of Alaska, have never seen the state of Alaska, and they receive bid forms and they do get contracts and they send up and they do the material. What this bill simply says that if they want to do business in the state of Alaska, they have to open an office here. If we give a contract to somebody from California or anywhere else and they do not have an office here where somebody can be a part of this community, pay taxes, buy a house, buy a car, it's not helping the state of Alaska. I approach this bill with the full knowledge, and I would like the committee to approach it with full knowledge. The 5% for Alaska bidder's preference, I do feel, is a subsidy. I do feel that the 15% is a subsidy. But I feel that by the sheer fact that it is creating additional jobs, which ought to be here since this is state money and it's going to help the economy in the state of Alaska, I think that it's a proper position and procedure to be taken. I wish it would have been 15 to begin with back in 1955, and the various attempts have from previous legislatures have been stopped at one point or another throughout it. Through alteration, saying let's add this amendment or that amendment, and it's very simple. When they put the 5% bidder preference in for Alaska bidders, vendors, that is who they were trying to address, and I simply am trying to address that particular line item of our statute at this time and change it from 5 to 15 so that with our cost of living we'll be more able to, our vendors and businessmen in the state of Alaska will be competitive with other vendors.
Thank you, Representative Cowdery.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the intent of the bill is good, and I am one of the co-sponsors on this bill. However, I think that we've got to make certain that we don't have a situation where we create a sham where a company could joint venture with somebody that had a business license could come under the qualifications that you mentioned for, say, on a big contract, say a $10 million contract where you had a 15% preference would leave $1.5 million and could allow them to buy into a joint venture with this very thing that we're trying to achieve. You see, by giving them, say 5% of the bid or 1% of the bid or whatever, just for the to get around this thing. So I think that the intent is good, but I would like to see some way that we could clean up this to keep that from allowing that to happen. And I think that we should make it such so that if the outside contractor did do that we would put the burden to sue on them and not have to have us to defend it in the court costs of us. Let them sue us. We can just make a statute that if it could be addressed such, I think that that possibly a substitute to address this problem if you haven't already addressed it.
I originally went through Senate Bill 114 from quite a few years ago, and that problem was addressed in there, and it was in my original draft. until I pulled the transcripts and found out what happened when that problem was addressed. The bill was vetoed by Governor Hammond, and it was vetoed because Sears and Roebuck Company came down here and they fell under that qualification because they're owned by an outside firm, more than they're owned by the firm, which is some form of a joint venture at their local store here. And they lobbied and persuaded the governor because of their input into the state of Alaska, because their contribution to the state of Alaska, because of financial reasons that they were going to suffer, they were being placed in this position, that it was going to hurt them, and they thought that they had contributed enough to the state of Alaska, they didn't want to be put in this position. And that is the reason that I took it out. I applaud, and if this committee can make a substitute that does that without us having the Brown and Roots and Sears and Roebucks of the world coming down and wiping out the little vendor that's going to create an additional 75 jobs in the state of Alaska, and those eventually become permanent, then so be it. I'm 100% before it, and I applaud any committee substitute that we can do.
Thank you.
I couldn't find it.
Thank you, Representative Larson.
Yeah, Representative Ward, I have one statement, I guess, and one question, so I'll take the question first. But an Alaskan bidder, I know within my past experiences I have seen, say, two scenarios. One would be an outside firm with no offices in Alaska getting a certain contract or bid, and then contracting mostly the subcontractors, people from Alaska, to do the work, which put a lot of Alaskans to work. On the other hand, I've seen just the opposite happen, where a large firm from outside would have a home office in Anchorage, probably staffed by one or two people. They were considered to be Alaskan bidders. They would get the bid and then bring everyone up from outside to do the job. So I guess what I'm saying, I agree with what you're trying to do. I don't know whether this is the method. Then the statement that I would like to make, the average junior high school in Alaska right now costs approximately $8 million to construct. A 15% on top of that $8 million would make it $9,200,000. Now, taking a high average in the construction of that high school, there would be approximately 50 employees, and that would be high. So that's a subsidy of $24,000 per job on that construction project, and I think that's a pretty high subsidy. I'm not saying we shouldn't have it, but I'm saying it's something we should take a very serious look at. Because if we're going to create employment in Alaska, we don't want to create artificial employment. We want to get something more substantial for our dollar.
Right.
Representative Ward.
Chairman, Representative Larson, I agree that would be a large subsidy, but this particular bill, this cost estimate on the physical note does not include effects on construction contracts, travel, and professional services, which are not affected by this act. The 5% bidder preference, which is this act affected by, the construction contracts have a different statute completely, which I would love to go after too, but I think that we'd have very large firms beating us to death. This doesn't affect that.
Thank you for that.
Representative Ward, let me pose a couple of questions. We're dealing with one thing. We now have in the statutes a 5% differential for a bidder's preference. We're now, the main thrust of it is to increase it from 5% to 15%. The groundwork is already laid for the 5%. So we're not changing the groundwork. We're increasing from 5 to 15, which is a greater sum. Whether or not it increases a population or doesn't is neither here nor there at this point in time. We're increasing between 5% and 15%, giving a greater preference to the bidders of the local of Alaska. That's the primary purpose.
Yes.
Now then, would this be in conflict with any fair trade laws? Just a yes or no, in your opinion.
No, and if I can follow up on that, I do have opinions, and it's held legally.
Excuse me one moment. Representative Bussell, I expect possibly another 15 minutes with your permission. He has to be out of here by before 1:30.
We've got to crank up at 1:30. And, you know, we're in the midst of a continuing clarity issue. We're kind of talking about a weighty issue today.
Okay, what's your pleasure for your bill?
18 million from 45 million in 2 days.
I don't feel comfortable in hearing the bill until you're in.
Well,
you have the opportunity.
This gentleman's from the.
You have someone here then.
Well, Cindy's here, and this gentleman's from the Division of Personnel over here, and there's no heartburn about the deal with the division, and it simply clarifies.
Just wanted to be sure that's your rule of we proceed without you.
Would you please, and Cindy,
thank
you.
I'm sorry for the interruption. I'm going to go for Mr. Cooney.
The states that have a bidder's preference, and one of the states that I the list that you have, almost all states that are over half of them do have a bidder's preference of some sort or another. But the interesting one is Hawaii. If you notice on the list, Hawaii has no bidder's preference. What they have is a tax where they have actually 22% bidder's preference, but they call it something different. And I do have material on that. But it's not contingent because of their cost of living is higher. And they call it they do it upon a local level instead of a statewide level. And they have local taxation there. And they do it through the cost of living analysis. And they figure if there's 44%, they've got a 22% tax. Yes.
Believe me, Representative Ward, I won't ask a yes or no question again. Number two, if the low bid from Seattle Inc. is $1 million, and the next low bid was Alaska Inc. at $1.5 million, would Alaska Inc. have to accept the bid for $850,000? Under your bidder's preference. Now the numbers are there.
Bid $1.5 million?
No. Alaska bid, the Seattle bid was $1 million.
Okay.
The second lowest bid was $1.5 million, which was Alaska Inc., we'll say. Now you're applying your 15%.
No, Seattle firm would get it because it's not 15%, it's $1.5 million.
$1.5 million, all right. 15% of, I'm sorry, I've got my figures wrong. Okay, if it was $1 million, you add 15%, that's $1,150,000. All right? Or $150,000 extra, okay? $1,150,000. Then, the two bids at $1 million each would be a tied bid, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So that would be up to the divisions to figure out which one they wanted.
The physical note of $50,000, but if they were the $1 million, what we would have in effect here is we would have that very same Seattle firm, which up until this point has never felt the necessity to do it, but they would have to become competitive upon a residential nature with the businesses of the state of Alaska.
We've already established that Seattle's from Seattle. Anchorage is for the Alaska firm's from Alaska. It turned out that you applied the 15%, they both came out to $1 million. Who's gonna make the decision?
If they both, and then if it was equal, I believe that within the bidding code, and I'm not sure if it's right, when there's an equal per penny bid, then it goes up for either negotiation from the administration, if they're both equal and not different, or else they go for new bids, one or the other, or else they go on a clarification.
Okay. Now then, to follow up on that, could not the outside bidders submit a real low bid, knowing full well the 15% is in it? Submit a low and enforce the state to award the bids to the Alaskan company, and by doing so cause the contractor to go broke on that particular contract because he had to accept a bid for less money than it would cost. In other words, that could be jury-rigged in there, could it not? What's to prevent this?
I think that the establishment of the fact that it's been done since 1955, we have enough case law to where it is an established procedure now, and I don't think that they could do it.
Well, there's quite a difference between $50,000 on a million-dollar bid and $150,000.
Yes.
That $100,000 is either making or breaking. Now, for instance, in the case of buying road grader blades or blades for road graders and scrapers and things and scarfiers and so on, that's put out to bid, and a lot of the companies bid the things. If we apply, those bids could come in from the outside on a real low basis. In order for me to get the bid, I could come in 15% higher based on the bids, knowing full well what the bids are going to be with the cost and shipping and the whole ball of wax, because we have to add shipping on top of it. I could lose my position if I were to buy all those grader blades and found out that I can't make any money on it, because I would be forced to take that bid and it'd be awarded based on that. And that's what I'm afraid of. So I could go broke and nothing flat doing it. As a matter of fact, I damn near did. Excuse me. I almost did. That's why I'm concerned about this thing. By placing that limit, that bidder's preference so high, we have it now at 5%, which gives the edge to an Alaskan bidder. When you start raising that thing up, you're giving more of an edge, I think, in some respects, to outside companies, because Alaska's got to stretch on this thing in order to reach it. It's a reverse deal on it, the way I'm looking at it. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying or not.
I understand it. I never had considered that as a reality that could happen. I just been looking at it too much on the positive part of it.
That's a dog-eat-dog business. I've been in it before. That's why I'm concerned that by raising that huge area up into 15% is a tremendous amount of money, believe that or not, in that bidding area. That you may be forcing this thing to happen. And those outside companies, in the cases of places where, for instance, you deal with Bethlehem Steel, you deal with Schunk, you deal with a lot of companies, that that's all they do, and that 15% is a boy. Plus the freight, plus this, that, and the other thing, it's a very, very serious consideration to raise it up that high. I would be more impressed, inclined to keep it with an edge, but not big enough to be able to affect that market. And I think that that's a very good possibility. It's something that you perhaps should look into a little bit, the contract side.
Well, my understanding was, I had another one prepared where it was going to cover construction contracts, which I assume that's what it would come under.
I just know that a note was passed to me. Is that why you took up politics? No, I would make a success out of it. But nevertheless, I mean, here's the problem. I would, the representative,
Furness,
thank you. Well, you wanted the floor.
Oh, that wasn't my note. Oh, thank you. I think you may have answered my question, at least it's been addressed. Representative Calvary had a question with you, Mr. Chairman, if I may respond to that. The question of assuring that a joint venture or a large construction company come in and take advantage of this, it is a concern, and I would suggest we probably look within DOT as a remedy handling that, and not this particular bill, since it does not cover construction contracts. It's primarily consultant contracts and vendor items.
Are there any further questions from the witness thus far? Do you have another statement you'd like to make, Representative Ward? I have another witness.
No, the only thing is that the $50,000 physical note, I would hope that it would be closer to $100,000, because that would create 150, in my calculations, permanent jobs the first day it passed.
But you will admit, sir, that there is a little gray area in there that I'd like to have you qualify.
Yes, and I will go back and qualify that.
As they say, there's two edges to a sword. This may be one we may look at a little closer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Representative Ward. Mr. Link?
Thank you. Bob Lincoln, the acting director of General Services and Supply in the Department of Administration. We put out the bids, which would be affected by the 15% bidder preference. Perhaps I hear more to answer any specific questions on the implementation rather than to speak for the administration's position on this. But I'd like to say that perhaps clarify the question that was just brought up the last time. If Seattle bid $100,000 and an Anchorage firm bid $105,000, the difference would be $5,000 right now, they would get the bid. We would contract to pay the Anchorage firm $105,000 for the purchase. Which is the reason for the fiscal note of approximately $55,000.
Now that's
the margin we would have to pay.
Question is, if the Alaska bidder was paid $105,000 for the contract, the bidder's preference then is laid on the Alaska bidder. In other words, it's costing us more. Now, if we go to 15% on that same low bid of $100,000 in Seattle Inc., we're going to pay him $115,000, the Alaska contract.
We could pay an Alaska contractor up to $115,000. He could then still win the bid, even though there was a low bid of $100,000.
Why can't you then take the 15% off the $100,000 and say, yes, he's got the low bid? Because it's costing us more money to do it that way than it is the other way, right?
I just lost track.
You lost track of my question?
Right.
All right. I have a Seattle contract. I put a bid in for $100,000. And then Cadre put one in, and he put it in for $105,000 because he's got a 5% deal. The low bid on it, you're going to take the low bid of $100,000, but you add another $5,000 into the contract. That's what you're telling me, that, right?
No.
Into the Alaska.
You're
going to pay him $105,000.
I think we both say the same thing. I would award the contract for a term coverage.
And pay $105,000?
$105,000.
Against me with $100,000.
Right.
So that fiscal impact is a lot more than $50,000.
I came up with some of those numbers, $50,000, by going back through as quickly as we could. We provided these numbers Representative Boyd's office. As quickly as we could, we went through bids last year, tried to determine the percentage differential between the prices and come up with how much more we would have paid if the preference last year were 15% than 5%. So that we would have paid $50,000 more for goods that we purchased last year. Some of the goods we purchased which would have been affected by the preference then, if it were 15%, then it would be 15%. That's the premium. That's what that is. That's the combination of those $5,000 that were in your example.
May I ask one other question? Is there a certain limit to apply that 15% to a dollar amount or in a ball contract?
Everything
from a $25,000 contract or 25%.
Everything is competitive in this.
I see.
I was just going to carry it a little bit farther because I had a hard time with the question too. If I come in with a bid, and I was from the Anchorage, and I come in with $115,000 a year for Seattle, we come in with $100,000, I would be awarded the bid. You know, if I come in at $116,000, you would be awarded the bid. Okay. And you don't know when you're bidding on something, you don't know what the bid is going to be. You're going to be fighting for something else. But if you do, in fact, come in, you know, up to 50% of your last bidder, you're entitled to be 50% open. But that's all it's about.
But the fact still remains that we're paying more for the last bidder in money than we are the Seattle bidder. It's costing us more money than we do.
You could, or you may come in, and I may be an Alaskan bidder, I may come in at $800,000, and you might be a Seattle firm and come in at, you know, I'm a, I'm making it at 80,000, you're making it at 100,000. So maybe I made you laugh.
Could, what's the bid spread average that, on contracts that you deal with? Have you got any feel for that?
I'm sure there's some exceptions.
Everything from nickels and dimes to substantial quantities of money.
No, but I mean, in percentage, 2%, 10%, 20%, what would you say is an average bid spread?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say it's difficult to
on three
really give you a good answer on that. Some of them are very, very close, and it changes every time. But I'd like to say is the point that was brought up by Representative Schultz is that the Alaskan bidder could win. And the Alaskan bidder does win. And the last time we checked, 75% of the time, the Alaskan bidder wins the bids.
Representative Washington. Well, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question to Mr. Lane. If you went out and you purchased, say, 100,000 pound of paper, and you put that on a competitive bid, would you find a situation where the fair market value of that paper may indeed be $100,000 if you went just directly, but the purpose of a competitive bid is you can potentially get a better price for it? Would you find a situation where, say, you've got two bidders or three bidders, one would bid, say, 89,000, maybe 78,000, or I see the third bidder would probably come in at let's say 85,000. Would you find that situation, as opposed to having to pay a premium above the fair market value of that inventory, isn't that the situation?
Okay, you have that's a good approximation. We get bids that are very close. Sometimes this bidder's preference will be the preference, or the premium paid will be nickels and dimes. You know, sometimes that'll affect maybe a $100,000 purchase.
Now, do you find yourself ever paying based upon the preference, or do you envision under this 15% having to pay an amount above and beyond the fair market value of the inventory, and if so, do you have the ability of rejecting the bid?
Yes and no. Yes to the first question, no to the second question. We'll find sometimes that there are products which are, there are limited numbers of manufacturers. There is perhaps nobody in the state distributing. A distributor in the state will become a distributor. They call them 10%ers or whatever. For example, a good example is probably license plates. The state purchases license plates on competitively bid. Most of the producing license plates are Prison Industries on the outside. We're buying our license plates from a firm in Eagle River who buys them at approximately, or sells them to us approximately 4% above the bid of the person who bid from Portland, where he's getting. So we're paying a 4% premium on the plates by buying them in state, higher than you would have bought if you bought them at the same place.
Link, in your opinion or in your position of the department, if the 15% is equitable, is it 5%, or do you find it to be, how do you find that the difference between the two? That's all we're talking about, is an increase 5% to 15%, which in our case would be the highest in the nation.
Well, from my position in all the purchasing, anything that reduces competition is not a good thing.
I can't
speak for the social benefits of the 5% to 15%. It's a substantial increase.
Do you find that this would reduce competition?
I increase competition.
Do you find that the 5% reduces the competition now?
Because the state is so close, the in-state bidders are so close in their competitiveness right now, I believe that it serves a purpose. But I feel that it's probably not the same.
Would you feel that we would not have free to everything that's not Now, it's actually the state of Alaska, which is probably everything. Did you find that you've been getting less good? Or an opportunity to receive less good? So, but you think you're paying more for it? You've been paying more for it by raising it by 2%. That's good. Gentlemen, I guess that's my whole point. The state of Alaska.
Thank you. Any of the questions answered them. According to your department, what is an Alaska bidder?
Okay, why is the bidder described in the statute as a person who's bidding, didn't make a 6 months, has an Alaska bidder's license, and bid under the name of an Alaska bidder's license? That's what he's saying, and that's the one we're talking about.
So in other words, it could be there is a large firm that has a home office in LA and has a branch office in Uniondale. One person has to be allowed to do it. And I guess my second question is in relation to a sharing group of skills. I don't know whether you can answer it or not, but increasing the custom of the 15%, do you feel that this would be good public policy?
I can't speak to public policy because I don't know what all the intent of the new increase to cost of government, but there is some benefit cost of that bill, I think.
Evidently, the main intent of the bill is to ensure local Ohio. It appears to be that. Local citizens have a regard to the board of contracts and that of a city in Alaska. And not necessarily the contract. You say that would be a fairly decent? I think it's a benefit that more than it is contract.
In this case, we're talking about buying stuff. I think that the point is that even if we do pay a premium for the goods, and even if we do pay the person who's a little bit more financial person, that he lives there, I mean, he may not pay taxes, but he's always required by the groceries and that sort of thing. Even if he doesn't pay a premium. But that doesn't get that person. You have a person that's been there. The placement competition develops within the state, then the pricing would be just too heavy. You want to fall back on a statement that we buy about 75% of goods now go to in-state banks, that's because they're out of place.
Is there any indication whatsoever, any proof of the matter, that the Alaskan contractor would hire more people? It just seems to me as an Alaskan contractor, and I put out $105,000, or I'm going to get $105,000 for a contract that was originally worth $100,000, and I've got my profit structure worked in over what I got to pay for, the goods, do the job, get the job done, plus all of the other freight and so on and so forth, that I'm going to make an extra $5,000 on it that I wouldn't have gotten had I not been with the 5,000, but when you increase that to 15,000, I'm not sure I'd put more people on to do the job. I don't see how that's going to increase put more people to work. I don't understand that. It's going to make the contractor a lot more money for the same thing if he didn't get the bid. You see what I'm trying to balance that off. Representative Baskett, you have something to say? By the way, if I may, let the record show that Representative Baskett is in attendance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, generally I agree with what you just said, but I would like to follow up on what Representative Larson said in terms of not only limiting competition for bidding from outside contractors, but you said that right now 75% of the bids let out are to Alaskan contractors.
Around there.
In your opinion, raising the
whatever we're dealing with here,
raising the percentage point higher for the non-residents to 15%, would that, in your opinion, increase or decrease the number of Alaskan bidders?
If anything, would increase. I would believe it.
And the, if I may follow up, the second point behind this, I think, is that, and it's a statement, is that you are right. It does cost, it does increase the cost of government. Because for doing the same amount of work, you pay up to 15% more with the contract.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Friss.
A couple of points I think should be brought out on this in answer to your question, then go, Mr. Chairman. One of the things to consider is that in the real world, the bidding is quite close. You'll probably find no more than a 2-3% spread. And I don't envision under this particular piece of legislation that you'll find anything different. The difference that you'll find here is that each company's cost of doing business is different. When you see a company putting together its bid, it takes together, takes in consideration its expenses in developing that bid. It's got to make a buck out of it. And what this will permit here, again, is to, we're talking state dollars, we're talking these dollars flowing back through the Alaskan communities. And I think the concern here that I hear is perhaps a gouging of the Alaskan businessman taking advantage of that situation. But if the businessman deliberately went out to take advantage of this, there's such a possibility that they will be a loser by bidding the project so high until they could feasibly exceed the 15%. Bidding competition, again, in my experience, has been very, very tight. I don't see this changing that at all. It's going to just continue give at least the department an ability to put more of those contracts within the Alaskan community.
Well, it would. I still go back to the statement I made a minute ago that if the Alaskan bidder gets it based on the 15%, I submit to you that that 15% will be kept in the company. And there's nothing to say he's going to hire more people to do the same job that he is with the 5%. And that's where the money's going to go, into the pockets of the contractor. Not that I'm objecting to it. I can see him. I can remember. Sure.
No, the only thing that I'd like to point out is that, you know, we just got to keep in mind that if we agree on the concept or the premise or whatever, that we feel that it does cost more to do business in Alaska and to open a business and to maintain that business than it does to run one elsewhere, then, you know, this piece of legislation is addressing that very concern. And I do feel that the costs are, in some areas, are more than 15% higher in doing business. You know, when you start going north out of Anchorage, it costs more to do business in Fairbanks. Going north out of there, getting up to Barrow, it costs more to do business there. So when you start addressing those kinds of things, that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think we have to agree on this particular piece of legislation is the fact that it costs at least 15% more to do business in the state of Alaska than it does outside to put it on a competitive level.
Representative Cotter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that, you know, just it's not a question, but just a statement that I think any contractor that's going to be successful is going to survive in the business. It's going to bid the job and not bid what his competitor is going to do. You're going to bid to supply or perform or whatever you're going to do, and you're going to base your bid on that and not on what somebody else is going to bid and what preference you might get. I mean, and I think that being in the business, I think that in the real business world, that's the intent of all the people in the business world. So I think the bill, the intent of it, will employ people and will benefit, but we're getting off in a tangent where I think that talking about motives and things like that, I think that that's not really what the intent of the bill is for.
Representative Vasquez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you think that, is it possible for an Alaskan bidder to subcontract the work he's bid for?
The definition of Alaska bidder does not preclude any form of a subcontract. And I'm sure it takes place. I know it takes place.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I might continue. If we raise the Alaskan preference for bids to 15%, I then can go get a $25 business license, put in a bid for the Susitna Inner Tie at $115 million, assuming it's $100 million, subcontract the bid to the lowest bidder who bid at $150 and make $15 million off the top.
Well, you've got to get Bonnie to move.
That's fine.
Representative Warren.
The problem.
The problem with the the representative's statement is that.
Sorry about that, Mr. Lake. It's an in-house joke.
The problem is he's referring to a construction contract, and this clearly
does not
cover construction. One other comment, Mr. Chairman, is we're assuming here that the Alaskan contract is going to try and take advantage of the entire 15%. They get what you'll find is because of the tight nature of the bid that the advantage clearly is for the Alaskan contractor, and it gives him a higher margin of advantage as opposed to giving him an ability to expand his bid, you know, deliberately.
Thank you. Is there any more questions from the, or did you wish to respond?
A couple of little comments. First of all, the example on the tie or the center dam or the power project, those are covered under the Alaska Power Authority and not DOT. Mm-hmm. And the Power Authority applies the Alaska Bidder's Preference. I think those, most recently, they applied them on the purchase of some joint venture arrangement was to purchase the inner tie steel structure from Curry Venture, but that's purchased in-state working through a firm in Taiwan, I think.
So what we're really trying to do is raise it from 5% to 15%, which is going to give the Alaska bidder a little bit more to work with, cranking in the cost of living, et cetera, et cetera. That's it.
Would you have any?
I have.
In other words, I'm asking, what benefit is this bill?
I couldn't hazard a guess.
But we could capture up to 0% more or up to 25%.
I would guess, based on last year's statistics, we will definitely capture more business for the state.
We will.
The exact amount, I couldn't guess.
Senator Vasquez.
And a follow-up to Representative Larson's question. What will the increase for number of businesses started in Alaska Beach? And obviously there's going to be, well, if there's a 15% preference, we have to have an office in Alaska that will qualify for this preference.
I have no idea the impact of that.
But the possibility of more
outside businesses opening an office in Alaska is quite possible.
It definitely exists.
So we'll have Sohio Incorporated
possible.
Of Alaska.
Right. Possible.
Okay.
No further questions for the witness. Thank you, Mr. Link, for coming in and giving us your expertise. Are there any more witnesses to give testimony? If not, I will entertain a motion to pass out of committee. Representative.
I'd like to make a motion to pass this on to the committee of referral with individual recommendations.
Representative Cotter's made a motion to pass out of the committee with individual recommendations. The objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We'll now take up.
Can we
stand at ease for a moment, please?
I would object.
Committee, come back to order, please. You're getting too loose in here now. Some of this stuff gets so heavy, it might be nice to have a little levity on occasions. It wouldn't hurt anybody. We're taking up now House Bill 209, an act placing emergency guards employed by the Department of Public Safety in the exempt service. We do have some witnesses. Where'd she go? Are you going to testify on behalf of Representative Bussell? Pardon?
I'll make the statement.
Yes, would you come up, please?
My name is Cindy Nelson, and I'm with Representative Charlie Bussell's office. This bill was submitted in response to a report done by the Blue Ribbon Commission on the State Personnel Act, and also based on recommendations on the fourth annual report of non-permanent employee employment, which I believe that you have copies of. I'll just read a quote from page 6 where it states its recommendation for legislation required to implement the intent of this section. It says, prior to the effective date, excuse me, I'm going to quote for page 4. AS 3925, 195-200, incorporated provisions of the personnel rules regarding emergency employees. While a little change was required to implement this portion of the law for most agencies, the most frequent use of emergency appointment, guarding prisoners, and protecting seized property has been significantly impacted. The Department of Public Safety hires emergency employees to guard prisoners or seize property in rural areas where a one or two person post prevents a trooper from maintaining 24 hour per day watch. The period required for emergency service is between arrest and either arraignment or transportation to a correctional facility, or until other arrangements are made to maintain custody of the seized property. It is not possible to predict the situations regarding those services with sufficient detail to make regular non-permanent appointments. For each appointment, all of the paperwork to hire an emergency guard, document the emergency, and separate the employee must be completed. The Department of Public Safety made 495 such emergency appointments in 1982, and the report also stated that there were only, out of the 495 emergency appointments, there were only 136 different employees hired, which indicates that they have specific people in the different rural areas that they do call upon when they do need a guard. They need to hire a temporary guard.
Thank you for your testimony, Cindy. I will subject you to question.
Thank you.
The the bottom line is that the paperwork burden on the department would be substantially reduced with little effect on the employee because the appointments are of such short nature. It will tend to help our law enforcement agencies, for one, in the bush areas. We're only talking about a 30-day situation, and I guess that's the bottom line on it. We do also have Mr. Ray, please.
Thank you. I'm Frank Ray, the Director of the Division of Personnel. This bill for you is intended to, as you indicated, to cut down the paperwork, allow employees to be hired for short periods of time without having to go through the normal competitive process of putting applications and getting on the list and so forth. And to that end, I support it. And would point out, however, that there may be one potential problem which I would like you to consider. In Title 39, there are two ways that you can accomplish this reduction of paperwork. That is by putting this group of employees into either the partially exempt service or the exempt service. The difference between the partially exempt service and the exempt service, both are opposed to the classified service, where you have to put in your application and get on the list and all that. Both partially exempt and exempt people do not have to do that. The difference between partially exempt and exempt status is that exempt means completely exempt from salary setting as well as from all the other bureaucratic requirements. What I would ask the committee to do is to substitute a small change here so that it would be that this act would then place these bars into the partially exempt service as opposed to the exempt service. The reason behind this request is that these are relatively low-paid employees and they are not covered by collective bargaining. And my concern is that their salary will be even further reduced by the department, which would then see these funds as discretional funds because they can pay them under law absolute minimum wage as opposed to the wage which is relative to their work on comparison to other classes within state government.
But the partially exempt would protect them from that rather than the exempt?
Right. The partially exempt will keep their salaries the same, but will also do away with all the paperwork requirement and allow the troopers to be hire them locally to protect, or to guard rather, and to transport.
If I may depart for just a moment on the normal questioning, I would ask Cindy if that been thought of in this bill.
Mr. Ray did approach Representative Bussell, and he has no objections.
He has no objections to it? Would you prefer a sponsor substitute in the event we do? Do you have any further testimony, sir?
No, just that if in order to do this, all you have to do is change the reference there, the statutory reference, so that, say, that Section 1, AS 3925-120, as opposed to 110, that would then put it in the partially exempt service rather than the exempt service. And then because there are a different number and under that group, the number instead of 22 would become 19. And then the lead-in sentence would then become an act placing emergency guards employed by the Department of Public Safety in the partially exempt service.
Partially exempt service. Line 8 is okay. Line 9, Section 139.25.120 versus
correct.
110.
Correct. And then
is amended by adding a new paragraph to read 10. Line 10
would then become 19 in parentheses
instead of 22.
Yes, sir.
Emergency guards employed by the Department of Public Safety, and that would complete those changes?
Yes, sir.
Any further testimony? Any questions from the committee? Representative Cotter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would there be any change in the fiscal impact of this by doing this? And
there is no fiscal impact.
If there would be, I mean, in your opinion, and also if second question would be, what if the hiring and firing protection is afforded to exempt employees from that address?
If I may, the first, to answer the first part of your question regarding the fiscal impact, the amount of money allocated to the department would be the same, so there would be no change. The requirement to, I'm sorry, the second part of that was
hiring and firing protection.
Exempt and partially exempt employees, they have no protection.
Questions? There's no further testimony. Thank you, sir, for your testimony this afternoon and your suggestions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Schultz.
May I make a motion to amend this?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Baskin.
Do we have any more witnesses?
I'm waiting now to see what we're going to do. There are some more witnesses. Terry would like to.
Oh.
Would you care to make the same statement? I really appreciate you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Terry Kramer, the Administrative Assistant to the Blue Ridge Commission on State Personnel Act. The Commission has sponsored legislation similar to House Bill 209 to place emergency guards in the exempt service. In conversation with Mr. Ray, who has testified, I believe the Commission would support the changes that he proposes because they do provide a little bit more protection to the employees than the exempt.
The not a question, but I guess a statement that when they do hire people, who am I talking to? When the department hires these people, they have to show through the director's office or something, I would presume, a public interest. The public interest, is that true?
They have to show an emergency need. The need, Mr. Chairman, is to guard prisoners that cannot be planned for as, or in some cases, to transport the prisoners from the rural area.
I do. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's shown after the fact. They have to report within 15 days of having been hired.
Are there any further questions from? If not, thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Schultz, I would entertain entertain a motion to go with a committee substitute.
So moved. Do we want to amend that at this time and amend line 7?
Well, we don't amend it. We'll go with the committee substitute, putting in the proper language that has been suggested by Mr. Ray, I believe. If that is all right with the sponsor, I want to be sure that that's all right with the sponsor. So we have cleared it with the committee.
Right. And part of the motion would be that we change line 7, that in front of the exempt would say partially on line 9. Section 1, AS 39-25120, and line 10, changing 19 to 22. Or 22 to 19, I mean, in reference.
Is there any objection to, formulating a committee substitute in the manner that Representative Schultz has suggested? If not, so moved. I'll entertain a motion to pass out of the House with the direction for the committee. Now, please note, before we do this, Representative Miller and then Eddie, you know, the right committee. And
Baskett.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move committee budget for House Bill 209 to the next committee of the Thursday of the Senate.
Are there any objections? Our action is then to adopt the committee substitute in the language prepared by President Larson and myself, and then move to move to the bill out of committee. Are there any further back? I'm sorry. I'm going to get names out to you guys.
You have them right here.
Are there any other subjects come forward, committee?
No.
If not, thank you for your attention. Your adjournment.
Oh, we're signed.